Larry, you are an air safety investigator in Anchorage, Alaska.
That's correct.
And we've talked to the chairman yesterday. We've talked to Jill Andrews, who I'm sure you know, and she's one of the regional investigators down here in the lower 48. And let's talk a little bit about the specifics and the special things of your particular region, your area, Alaska. It's a whole different world, huh?
Yes, Alaska is a little different. Accident investigation all over is basically the same, the process itself. But Alaska introduces some intriguing aspects as far as logistics of getting to an accident site, support at accident sites, and those kinds of things. Plus, the types of aircraft that we deal with predominantly are general aviation aircraft. We find entire fleets or scheduled airlines that use nothing but four-seat and six-seat Cessnas and Pipers and those types
scheduled
of
scheduled airlines.
They're scheduled airlines.
Wow.
Yeah, with a Cherokee 6.
Talk about when people complain about the puddle jumpers and they're talking about the 19-seaters. They have no idea, huh?
They have Cherokee 6s with big Eskimo suits and big life rafts, right?
That's the other problem is the weather brings its own set of problems with equipment and logistics as far as getting to accidents also and also causing accidents because of the weather. So
with such extreme conditions, I guess as you can get with icing, I would imagine is a lot more prominent of a situation in some of the colder climates there. Visibility problems, what are some of the problems you have that down here in the lower 48 we don't see that much of?
One of the issues for an investigator in Alaska is the territory that we cover all the way from southeast Alaska, which includes Ketchikan and those areas. That's actually a rainforest. So there you're dealing with 200-foot tall trees that are 4 feet in diameter. Everything is covered with moss and soaking wet. As the extreme, we're up in the north, 1,000 miles away, we could be on the north slope the next day where it's frozen tundra lakes, no trees anywhere in sight. All the way down to the Aleutian Chain, where they're just small islands that are windswept with grasses and rocky faces and that kind of stuff. So
wow.
when we get called to an accident, the first thing we have to figure out is the logistics of getting to the accident and the equipment that we're going to need in order to investigate the accident. And it can be quite different from day to day based on the seasons also.
Has the NTSB determined what the number one cause of accidents is in Alaska?
I think it's probably not much different in Alaska than it is worldwide or here in the lower 48 states, as we call them. We find the vast majority of accidents are basic piloting skills and people not staying current or pushing the envelope. It's one place that you don't want to fly outside the box.
See, and I would have guessed it would have been controlled flight into terrain or scud running, you know. There's a lot more of that, and it's, I think, a little bit more widely accepted by the pilot group up there.
So you hear.
So we hear, yeah exactly.
And that's probably true. We don't have the available weather. The systems, weather systems are different up there. The mountain passes are somewhat different. One of the things that the FAA has done up there is they've installed 120 or 130 webcams now in mountain passes around Alaska and at remote villages so that the pilots and the operators can actually look at the weather where the cams are. Like Lake Clark Pass is a very big fishing area in one of the areas between Dillingham and Anchorage, and you can now look at weather cams at both ends of the passes, and you still can't tell what's in the middle, and that's one of the big problems, but it's helped. We've actually seen a reduction in accidents over the past few years, and we think a lot of that has to do with part of the capstone program and the weather cams and more resources available to the pilots up there.
Now, I know a lot of people down here try and take a little, not necessarily vacations, but everybody wants to go see what it's like to fly in Alaska. So do you get a lot of insurgence of people from this area who come to Alaska and then try their piloting techniques here? Do you see higher rates among maybe people that don't live there, that don't fly every day, as opposed to those that do this as a regular route, or does that not seem to factor?
Well, we have an influx every spring and summer of pilots from the lower 48 who come up there, and it's really a nice place to fly. I wouldn't, anybody who has the aspiration to fly in Alaska, come up and take a look. But you have to do it carefully. Weather changes really quickly up there. There are resources. There's a lot of local folks that you can talk to. We do have accidents with visiting pilots every year. Fortunately, most of them are non-injury or minor injury, but we do bend a lot of metal up there. We still see a lot more local pilots bending airplanes simply because there's so many of them. And the summer season with the tourists on board, it triples or quadruples the amount of airplanes in the air at any given time as opposed to during the winter and non-tourist seasons.
Well, the pilots who live there are pretty accustomed to flying in that region and in that weather, and visiting pilots are probably a little more cautious than the fellows there and the gals that are flying every day in Alaska and dealing with all of those issues that are special to the area.
That's true, but we also find that familiarity sometimes breeds a little bit of contempt for the conditions, and I've talked to a lot of pilots who said, well, I've done that 100 times before, and I've said, well, you've been lucky 99 times. This time you didn't make it. And fortunately, only about 10% of our accidents up there are fatals. And a lot of folks just bend a lot of metal up there.
And sandbars and things like that?
Yes, landing on sandbars. We see a lot of accidents during change of seasons when it starts to thaw out and break up because a lot of airplanes are still on skis at the time. Some people are transitioning back to wheels. And sometimes they'll take the skis off a little too soon, and the lake won't be quite as frozen, and they've been landing on it with wheels, that kind of thing. So we see a lot of nose-overs and that kind of stuff. And we get a lot of folks up there who think they're bush pilots and attempt the sandbar landings and that kind of stuff without the real experience and proper training and techniques to do those kinds of things.
Now, I saw this on PBS once. Let me try it.
Well, what is some of the good proper training? I mean, what kind of pilot? You're down here. You're not actually up there. You can get with a local once you get there. But what can we do to prepare skills for that kind of flying around here?
Actually, mountain flying courses are excellent. Survival courses are excellent. In Alaska, you're required to have the appropriate survival equipment on board the aircraft. It's going to take a while. Again, most of the accidents are non-injury, but we have planes that may be down and we find out about it, but it's not unusual for them not to be able to get in and extract the passengers and the crews for several days, depending upon weather conditions and availability of resources. Some places are a long way out there. We have a good record of finding folks and folks contacting aircraft. Everybody monitors 121.5. They monitor the ELTs, the regional operations center up there, keeps a good tab on the airspace, and the National Guard, Coast Guard, all those folks are real attuned to the flying community up there. So if you let somebody know where you're going and you make reasonable contacts, we generally know where you are and generally will get help to you. But in the meantime, you've got to be self-sufficient. So some good survival techniques, some good equipment along with you helps out. Mountain flying courses, anything like that. Good pilotage is important because there are not a great deal of nav aids. Certainly GPS mm-hmm. has helped a great deal, but your traditional nav aids just aren't there.
Mel, don't leave your fishing pole and your bear gun at home.
Yeah, no. Those are
you
survival.
You need your big
techniques.
Boomer with you up there.
Because I have such a collection.
Larry Lewis from the NTSB, we thank you for joining us in studio today. It's okay. Been our pleasure having you. And it's an interesting environment you work in up there.
Yes, I appreciate you giving the time to the NTSB, and particularly Alaska. We've enjoyed it here.
Are there any specific resources on the web people can tune into if they want more information?
Actually, if you want to travel to Alaska, AOPA on their website has excellent resources, and they've what to look for, books that you can get. There's some excellent guides for flying the highway or the trench or coming up the coastline, whichever route you choose to take. There's a lot of information out there, and I encourage you to get all of the information and the Canadians flying through Canada, they're very, very helpful with CANPASS and those folks.